All right, guys, I'm excited. We are back to normal. The three of us just talking about games and God. Like, this is what it's about. This is what GSP has become, and I'm excited. No more of this messing around. No more of this trying to, you know, figure out whether or not I'm going to be on the podcast or not. This is going to be great. So, what are we going to do with the opener? Oh, ha ha. Very funny, guys. Yeah. You're going to haze me a little bit because I've been gone for a while. Look, I was here for the last episode. All right. This isn't funny. What are y'all doing? Guys? Romo? Daniel? TR? Welcome to episode 173 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where usually a couple of guys get together to talk about games and God and how these things come together beautifully. But this is going to be another solo mic episode where it's just me, your host, Mike Perna. The rest of the guys are not in-house, mostly because they've got other things going on that need their attention. Specifically, Mr. Romo is gearing up for a trip that he's going on with his church. So the good news is that you can be preparing yourself for the fact that TR is coming back for a little bit. But that means that because of the fact that he's pretty much one of the guys who's running the show, I don't think he's the guy, but he's one of them. So that requires a lot of his attention, and so he simply didn't have time to be on the podcast. And Daniel is actually part of the team that went out to GaryCon. It was actually Daniel and Sean to represent the Inroads board, but it was also a couple members of our community who are actually pretty close to where Daniel is, and it was going to be in attendance at the show. So Zach, Hope, and Chuck. I hope I didn't miss anybody, but that's the faces that appeared on all the reports I've been getting back from GaryCon. So if you're there helping us out and I didn't mention you, I'm officially sorry, but for those of you who I did mention, my goodness, thank you all for making that happen. It's so cool. So I could actually be in church today talking about the fact that I have a team of people at GaryCon. GaryCon is, for those of you who don't know, is a convention that has been put on by the children of Gary Gygax. Gary Gygax being one of the people who made Dungeons and Dragons. And this is actually their 10th year. It's mostly focused, as you might expect, on role-playing games, not just D&D, but just role-playing games and the like. And for a while, they had board games, but that kind of fell off, and it just, there wasn't anybody to run the board game library. But we actually got in contact with Derek White, who asked us, "Hey guys, we kind of want to bring the board game library back. Do you want to help?" So, one, we're always up for helping Derek because Derek is amazing. But two, we had the opportunity to hang out with some absolute legends in the gaming world and play board games with them. So yeah, we made that happen. The team got in the car and drove out there, and they have been having a blast. It is the reason why Daniel is not recording this, because I'm guessing that he's either almost home or is currently driving home from that convention as I record this. That said, if you're wondering, oh my goodness, why on earth are we not hearing about all the cool stuff that's happening at GaryCon? That's because later this week, I'll be releasing a bonus content episode where I'm going to take all the different audio that Daniel has sent me, put it all together, make it all kind of pretty, and send it out to you guys so that you can hear all of the amazing experiences that the team had out there. So, and I'm sure when Daniel comes back and we do our next full host kind of podcast, you will get more report. The sound bites that he sent me are great, but there's no way possible that it even begins to talk about all the cool stuff that was going on, because he was in constant contact with us. So I got to hear all about it, and I look forward to being able to let Daniel tell you about that himself. One last update before we get into the meat of the episode proper. I wanted to give folks an update on what we've been doing as far as a donation to the kids at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School. Now, if you're here in the US like I am, it's kind of impossible to have not heard the name of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Even overseas, I know that there are people who have talked about it and who have mentioned it. This is the scene of what has become the most recent in a tragically long line of school shootings. In this particular instance, a gunman entered the school, shooting up a whole lot of people, and 17 of them, both faculty and students, lost their lives. Now, whenever you have a tragedy of this nature, people want to help in whatever way they can. And in this case, a lot of people sent school supplies and letters and other stuff that, you know, to kind of support the teachers and support the kids and help people so that, you know, in some way we're saying, like, we see you, we know that this is a problem and we want to help. Apparently this outpouring was so huge that the school doesn't even know what to do with this stuff. Like literally a representative from the school said, please stop sending us these school supplies. We don't know what we're going to do with all of them. In the same news article that was sent to me, this representative of the school came out and said, what we need is stuff that the students can use right now. Specifically stuff that we can use for therapy to kind of help them process. We want to do stuff that's going to challenge them and help them to develop critical thinking and that sort of thing. We want board games. Please donate board games to the school. Now, the second this news article came across my path, I said, oh, we have to do this. We have to jump on this. So I immediately messaged the board. I sent them the link, and I'll be sure to put the link to the Sun Sentinel. I'm going to put that link to that article as well into the show notes of this episode. But I sent them the link and I said, guys, look, I want to do this. I want to help. You know, I've looked at the funds. Let's dedicate $200 to buy games to send to these people. And the board, being a collection of awesome people, looked at me and said, well, yes, let's do that, but we should really get the community involved too. We should get the regulars involved and see what we can do. So on Monday, the previous Monday to me recording this, I put out a video and I said, look, anybody who wants can donate to this. We are definitely going to do $200 worth of games to this school because we think this is important. And y'all responded. Folks in our community got together and added to our $200 to make a total of $300 that was going to go to order games to go to the school. That on top of the couple people actually sent us board games, and we're going to have to process some of those because some of the guys have picked some up at GaryCon that people were like handing them games and say, here, this goes to the kids. I got sent a couple. That's going to have to be processed to a second one, but I want to give you the update on the order that anytime I use money that you folks have donated to us, I want to make sure I let you know both what it was spent on and kind of in this case, because it was buying games, I want to specifically address some of kind of my mindset as to why I picked certain games. Part of that is the logistics of I have $300. I want to get the most out of that $300. But part of that was also because when I mentioned that I was going to do this, a lot of people responded with, do this, give them this game. This game would be perfect. And I didn't use a lot of those suggestions. And I want to show you why. I want to be upfront with you folks and kind of give you my mindset as to why I picked the games that I did. I ran all of these by the board before I clicked the purchase button. But I want to make sure that because folks in our community donated to make this happen, either by giving us the funds in the first place to make our commitment or by adding on to that, I want to let you know why this is happening. So the games that were ordered are Sushi Go Party, Rhino Hero Super Battle, Pit Crew, Takinoko, Lanterns, Lotus, New York Slice, Number 9, Quirkle, and Grim Forest. Now, some of these are because I wanted something light. I wanted something that was super easy, super approachable, and super fun in a small kind of, I don't know, compact kind of situation. I wanted something that could fit into a lunch break in case the kids don't have the opportunity to take class time, that they don't have a study hall. If they didn't have the opportunity to sit down to a major hour plus epic, I wanted to make sure they got something that they could take off in nice little chunks. So I tried to focus on things that were either close to an hour in gameplay or shorter. I wanted something that was easily approachable so that whether they're a gamer or not, they can appreciate what's going on. And again, the person who addressed this to the world out there basically said, we want something that encourages critical thinking. So that's why things like Takinoko, which is all about patterns and figuring out whether you want to go for this version or this version to get points. Why things like New York Slice, which is like the I cut, you choose kind of thing. Quirkle is all about where to maximize the usage of each shape and color. Lanterns is literally a Mensa approved game. It's so good. Like number 9 is all about spatial relations and mathematics. And so every one of these titles is either specifically for its simplicity, aka things like Sushi Go Party and Rhino Hero Super Battle, its ludicrousness, like that's why Pit Crew got added, because there's something about the ridiculousness of a bunch of people shouting at each other and playing, you know, cards numbered 1 to 10, and other things like that. The only one that I wanted to go a little bit big, I wanted to go a little bit like oomph, is Grim Forest. And Grim Forest is simple enough that little kids can play it, but the production value is so good. Like it's still under the auspices of that shorter game. It's still something that's very simple at a base level, but there is I wanted to get Grim Forest so bad. And so the fact that I can get it to these kids and give them something that's a little heavier on the spectrum, but not so much that you really need to be a gamer to understand it. And plus it is, it's a simplistic game, but it is very much a strategy. It's a when to do what and kind of area control. There's a lot going on there, and I wanted to get that in the hands of some people. So that's the short version of why I selected these games. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of games on the market. There's lots of opportunity for different games to be out there. If you're listening to this and you're like, man, you know, I didn't even hear about this before Mike put the order through. I really wish I could have done something. Please don't send us anything. We're already kind of having to sift through the games that were given to us. The order has already gone out. If you do want to donate, like I said, I'm going to put a link to the Sun Sentinel article that called for the games in the first place. It has the school's address. It has the name of the contact person to get in touch with. Go ahead and donate. It doesn't have to be tagged with us. If you want to say, you know, I heard about it from Inroads Ministries, that's fine. We'll, you know, we want to be supportive of this, but ultimately, we want to just get games in the hands of these teachers and these students. So if you're listening to this and you really wish you could have been a part of it but didn't hear about it in time, please feel free to donate games to them. I already received an email from the contact person at the school. She was overwhelmed by your guys' generosity. And so I don't think there's any shortage of – it's not like the other stuff where they're like, please don't send any more. We don't know what to do with it. She was like, wow, this is amazing. I can't believe you guys are doing this. So if you want to donate, check the link. It'll be in the show notes. And I'm super excited that we get to be a part of this. I love that the board backed it. I love that you folks in the tavern, the regular community, I'm super glad that you guys wanted to be a part of it as well. And this is when it's cool to be part of a nonprofit, guys. It really is fantastic, and I'm really thankful that we got to support these kids in some kind of way. So this is the part usually where we say, what have I been playing? This is the part where it's like, oh, you know, what's the stuff that's hit the table? And honestly, the answer to that is not much. We've been dealing with multiple back-to-back nor'easters. I have had so much snow dumped on my head. We've had trees snapping. I just got power back the other day. It has been nuts around here. And on top of that, I have a 2-month-old baby. And so my ability to get board games to table has been not impossible, but just shy of that. So what I've been playing is not much, except I can say that I have joined up with a couple guys from the regulars. It's Joe Monzo, Jeff Jackson, and Justin Lowmaster. And apparently nobody sent me the memo that your name has to start with J in order to be a part of this group. But we decided that we were going to play Lords of Waterdeep in the form of the app. Specifically because the app, whether you have it on Steam like I do, or if you have it on your mobile device of choice, like some of the other guys do, they have an option where you can play, and it's kind of like play by email. Like, you can make your turn, and then everybody has the opportunity to just do their turn at their leisure. Because Lords of Waterdeep, if you've never played it, it takes place in Waterdeep, which is a, let's just call it infamous city in the D&D world, specifically in the Forgotten Realms setting. The theme is not overly important, though, so if you've never played D&D, you can still play this game. It's just the flavor. It's a worker placement game. You are moving your guys around the city of Waterdeep, doing different things and performing quests by recruiting parties of adventurers. So you're recruiting warriors and clerics and rogues and wizards to go out and do certain things. The reason being is because you are one of the masked lords of Waterdeep. So everyone is secretly given a character, and that character gets certain bonuses. Like, some of the characters, like, if you do quests that involve arcana or commerce, or if you, for every building you get bonus points at the end of the game. But nobody knows who each other is. And so you're all trying to do these quests and get bonus points. And at the end of the game, it simply comes down to who has the most points. It's a simple game, but I have a ton of fun with this, partly because I do resonate with the theme. I think that it's really fun and really nerdy, and I kind of love it. But also because I just like a simple worker placement game. It's Lords of Waterdeep. It wasn't the first one by any means. There have been a lot of worker placement games that came before it. But for me, it was kind of my first, you know, tip, you know, just a toe tap into what is worker placement. And so it's been fun playing with these guys. I got destroyed the first game we're playing. We just started another game. I'm kind of excited about the potential. I don't want to give away too much because every one of these guys listens to the podcast. So I don't want to say who my lord is or what I'm building or what my strategy is, because you guys ain't going to get that information. But I just love playing this. And yeah, there's something to be said about, I wish that we were at the same table. I wish we could talk or get on the Discord and like talk smack to each other. But there is something just nice about doing my turn when I can. And, you know, I admit that because of my schedule, the way it is, I'm usually the guy that's holding everybody up. So I appreciate their patience, but it's been fun. It's a way to get my gaming in without being able to compromise the fact that I've got a family to take care of and other stuff that's taking my time right now, as I'm out of the baby sabbatical, but at the same point, I am still in the period of, I got to dial it back a little bit and take care of things before I can go whole hog again. So it's nice to still be able to get my gaming out. Now we're going to move on to the archive dive. Don't think that I've forgot it. It is my one and only kind of official segment to this podcast. I'm not letting it go. The archive dive, in case you are new, is that we look at a game that is at least older than 1 year. Because there's so many games coming out and so many different things that catch the attention, it's really easy for stuff to kind of fall through the cracks. And so we want to occasionally just take some stuff that might have fallen outside of the radar, especially if you're new to the hobby, and kind of bring your attention to it. You're going to notice a theme of simple games. So Lords of Waterdeep that I mentioned is a simple worker placement. I'm going to play another simple card game called Guillotine for my archive dive. Guillotine, I have played this so many times, I have lost count. In fact, my copy comes with a little guillotine kind of standee. I don't have that anymore because mine fell apart. Mine was absolutely destroyed. But the overall thing of Guillotine is that you line up a bunch of different noblemen during the French Revolution, and you are basically the headsman trying to get the most renown by taking the most famous heads of French noblemen during the revolution. It's not exactly the, you know, most family friendly kind of theme, but at the same point, it's so cartoony and so ridiculous that you kind of overlook that aspect of it. As it stands, the gameplay is really simple because you are just playing one card per turn to move people in the order. So you can move people so many spaces up, or you move them back, or you're going to take a specific faction like the nobles or the army or the commoners, or you can do all, not the commoners, the religious group. Like you can, there's all sorts of different things that you're trying to get, and you can score bonus points for certain factions, and certain nobles are worth more points. There's soldiers that individually, soldiers are not very useful. They're not a whole lot of points, but if you get a lot of them, they're each worth a boatload of points. Like soldiers kind of bolster each other. It's a really fun, really silly game because it, as much as I want to say that the theme is kind of gross, it's really ridiculous. Like the things you can do, like you can take, instead of this person being in the front of the line, now the person that was in the back is now in front, and different stuff like that. It's a very light game and it's very, very quick, but I can't tell you how much fun playing this game. I've also played it pretty much everywhere. Like there was one point my friends and I were waiting to see a Shakespearean play at a Shakespeare in the Park. We had a blanket kind of laid out on the ground there, and we played Guillotine on that blanket. So, I mean, it's a game that can go anywhere. It's a simple deck of cards, and it's a ton of fun. I highly recommend it. You can usually get it pretty cheap. Like I said, it's just a deck of cards, and it's one of those standards. It's one of my classics. I have it with me all the time whenever I do game days. Now, you may have noticed a theme. Guillotine, as I just mentioned, is a very simple card game where you are just manipulating cards and taking the one at the end of the line. Lords of Waterdeep, despite the fact that it is set in an auspicious town in the D&D world, really is just a simple worker placement game with not too much weirdness to muck up the works. Now, I love overproduced stuff. I love Rising Sun. It's sitting on the shelf behind me, and the fact that it hasn't gotten played yet is a travesty. I love Blood Rage, you know, the spiritual predecessor of Rising Sun. And yeah, part of the reason why I love it is the giant minis. I love City of Remnants. City of Remnants is a beautiful mess. That game is doing so many things at the same time it shouldn't work, but I love it. I love Abyss, which when Abyss came out, everyone was like, this is a really, really basic card game. Why do we have this board and these weird pearls and all this stuff that really doesn't need it? I love that stuff. I love the board. I love the plinking of pearls in my little oyster shell. I love overproduced nonsense in my games. It's who I am. But at the same point, every once in a while, I want to just dial it back and be like, just because a game is simple, just because its design is not huge and epic, just because it doesn't have this giant footprint on your table, doesn't mean it's a bad game, or even that it's a lesser game than these giant, super pretty, super produced kind of stuff. Those big ones are very eye-catching, but the simple ones can just be this really tight, really nice experience, and I want to make sure we draw attention to those. Now, the one that got me thinking along these lines is actually a crowdfunded kind of game that the campaign is going right now. So I do want to make sure that I talk to you about it, but at the same point, I'm going to put a giant caveat before all of this that this is a first impression because I haven't actually played it yet. Full disclosure, the designer, when I mentioned it on Facebook that I was excited about this game, the designer reached out to me and sent me the print and play files, so I will be able to play it. You will probably hear me talk about it on a future episode, but I do want to talk about it at this present moment, just on my first impressions, because of the fact that it is crowdfunded and needs eyes on it to make sure that people see what's going on. It's called Space Princess, and before you ask why, yes, it is very much inspired by Princess Leia. Specifically, the characters in this are kind of the non-copyright infringing Princess Leia and non-copyright infringing Darth Vader. It is a very simple card game. Leia has power. I don't even, you know what, for the sake of it, I'm just going to call them Leia and Darth Vader because we all know that's the case. And I'm not even knocking it because it's actually on their promotional stuff. And I'll explain a bit why they made sure they pointed out that that's the case in a little bit, and it's why this game really hits home to me personally. But the long and the short of it is it's a two-player game, and you have a grid of cards that show walls and corridors and doors. And the player who is playing the Princess Leia character is trying to escape through this grid and make their way to the escape pod. The Darth Vader character and his two trooper friends are trying to make sure that they capture her. It's a two-player game, so the Darth Vader character plays Vader and the troopers. The actions are very character-specific. So Leia has the ability to move rooms, open doors, change things. She has the ability to shoot her lasers at troopers to make sure that they don't stop her. She has the ability to hide and kind of disappear from sight and then move to another room. There's all sorts of kind of very escapey kind of things, but she does have the ability to fight back, which is nice. Because normally when you make a very escapey kind of character, you're like, oh, well, they're not strong enough to fight. But she does. She fights back. She can take out troopers. Vader does everything like making sure that, brings his troops in and kind of corners the princess and tries to stop her and can capture her and end the game. It's a very simple card manipulation kind of thing. Like, you're programming your decisions. Like, each person gets a couple different cards in their hand. And from that, the cards that you draw, you actually select one. You select them at the same time and reveal them at the same time. So you're trying to think and get into the mind of the other player. Where are they going to move next? It's kind of hidden movement in the fact that you don't know they're moving there, but it's not so much hidden movement as simultaneous movement. And so you're trying to get in their head and say, okay, where are they going to move? Not where are they right now, but where are they going to be next turn? Where are they going to be as I'm trying to figure this out? Where are they moving? What's their goal here? How can I manipulate the board? How can I change things so that I'm the one who is making them go certain ways or stopping them from go the way they want to go? The game is really cool. I like the fact that it's asymmetric powers. I like the fact that, for all intents and purposes, the guy playing Vader has an advantage of having other cronies on the board. I like the fact that the Princess Leia character is really scrappy and it's both has the ability to fight back and run away. I really think that this is really cool, and it's on a 5x5 grid of little cards. There's no board. Everything in this can be very pocket-sized, and I like that. So, if this game sounds even remotely interesting to you, I'm going to kind of, season the pot a little bit. So not only do you have the cool asymmetric gameplay, not only is this a nice, simple, small-box two-player game, not only do you have that mental kind of gymnastics of how do I read this person and what are they going to do next, there's a couple other things on top of this. One, I love a game that is very cheap and easy to obtain because of the fact that I have a new baby and finding the scratch to get any game is hard. And so this game complete, as well as the print and play files. So you get the print and play files and the game itself. It's $25. You can't really go wrong with a $25 card game. So there's that. It's a relatively manageable price tag. You also have the fact that it is supporting an independent designer, an independent publisher. I like that. It's kind of my jam. Like, as much as I love taking the big companies and the reliable companies who I know are going to make good products, as much as my favorite designers are folks that it's everybody's favorite designer, I'm a sucker for an Eric Lang game. What can I say? I like supporting folks who make good products and help them kind of make more products and get their game to market when, maybe they wouldn't have the ability to any other way. And there is one reason that this game, above all the other games that I've seen, all the other games I could reference here, there's a reason why this one particularly stands out to me. A portion of every game bought is going to go to the International Bipolar Foundation. As many of you know, my wife has bipolar, and the idea of supporting an organization that supports research, supports treatment, and almost more important than both of those is to decrease the stigma of bipolar and decrease the stigma of mental health issues to begin with. It was really cool. Like I said, the games designer reached out to me and I said, this is really cool that you're doing this as a person who cares for somebody with bipolar. And I really appreciate that you want to do this. And it's actually partly directly tied to the theme. Carrie Fisher's pet charity, like this was her baby, is the Bipolar Foundation. So that's part of it. They're like, hey, we're making a game that might as well be Princess Leia. It's going to support the Bipolar Foundation. But the designer also has very close connections to people with bipolar, as so many do. And so, yeah, part of me wants to put this out there in front of people's faces because I want money to go to the International Bipolar Foundation. I think that's a good and worthy cause. So, again, this is first impressions. I think this game has a lot of potential. It's a simple design, a 5x5 grid of cards, two characters, and you're basically playing one card simultaneously each turn. I think it's simple. I like the small footprint. I like the design. And the artwork is so cool. The cartoony, pulpy kind of artwork that's involved. Kind of like something out of like a Burgle Brothers or something like that. I definitely check it out. I'm going to put the link into the show notes. And you can check it out for yourself. You're going to hear me talk about this again because I will get this to table. And I'm going to hopefully get it to table before – it's got 25 days left in the campaign. So hopefully I'm going to get it to table before that 25 days is up to give you folks more of a full kind of report on it. But I do want to make sure that I put that out there because I like the neatness of this design, the compactness, the simplicity. I like it. But – that's not the only game that scratches this itch. I could go for days on different games that do this. From the very beginning, I usually, when I talk about the grand spectrum of gaming, on the heavy end, I always talk about Twilight Imperium. Well, I'm going to have to change it slightly because it's Twilight Imperium 4. But I bring up TI4 all as the heavy end. But then on the other end, the simple end, I talk about Win, Lose, or Banana. This game is so compact, the design's so tight, it's literally three cards, Win, Lose, and Banana. It's a game that I carry in my wallet all the time. It's such a stupid little game in a lot of ways, but at the same point, I've started so many conversations, had so many great moments, and had so many fun stories. I actually, when I went to an event held by the folks at Game Church this past year, I was asked to be a speaker, and as my illustration, I brought out Win, Loser, Banana and had some really fun times playing that with people at that event. Another game that I have an absolute love for that's very simple design is Onitama. Onitama is part of the Dice Tower Essentials line. It's basically chess with way fewer pieces, and instead of the individual piece having a certain move set, you are basically choosing from a selection of a handful of moves each turn. And so your goal is to either eliminate the master or the monk or whatever you want to call it, the larger piece than the rest of it from the opponent, or to move your master over to the temple on the other player's side of the board. It's such a great game. I've played it. Like, I'm not one for chess, and I often, when I play Onitama, like, have that moment of, I can't believe you just did that. I didn't see that coming. But even despite the fact that, like, I'm terrible at it, I love playing it. It's such a simple design. Five pieces on one side, five pieces on the other. You're choosing from two moves at a time. It's so easy, so simple, but such a great experience. Council of Verona is another small box game. It really is a simple little game of manipulating where cards are and putting your support behind cards that you think are going to be successful by the end of the game. It's a short game, and it really is just this small little experience, but I have a ton of fun with it. And it's even, I'll even say it's even in spite of the theme. Like, unless you're a Romeo and Juliet fan, you don't care about this theme. But there's something about the politics of making sure that each particular side, each family has the most people in town or the most people in exile, that you're making sure that, you know, you support, you know, Romeo and Juliet being together or support that they don't. And then you can add a little bit of an expansion that adds like poison to it. But even then, if you don't have that expansion, it's still a wonderful time. I can't talk about small games without talking about Avignon, which is one of my favorite games from the folks at Button Shy. Most of Button Shy's catalog could fit in here. But Avignon is basically a line of characters. You have to manipulate them on the board. You can basically either push them away, pull them towards you, or basically do whatever the special ability is on the card. You get to do two of those per round. You're trying to bring as many people to your side of the board as you can. First person to get three of them wins. It's such a simple little game with such a small footprint, but I love it. It's this intense experience because you're trying to sit there and go, all right, he's really set to win. Which combination of moves will make sure that I'm still in this? Or I can get one person on turn one, but then the guy's going to be on the defensive like all the time. How am I going to get this to work? I want to bring up Tides of Time, which is a great one from the guys at Portal Games. It's a two-player card drafting game. Like I spent a lot of time talking about how Sushi Go is great for that simple, fun kind of drafting experience. Tides of Time is a little bit more serious than that, but it's a two-player game. You can play a game of Tides of Time in minutes, and it still has this cool moment of the ability, one, to just draft cool things, and the artwork is glorious. Oh my goodness, the artwork is so cool on Tides of Time. But it has this simple little mechanic of you can take one card from the previous turn and bring that into the next era. It's great. I love this game. And then, of course, to kind of wrap up my whirlwind tour of simple, tight, wonderful design that isn't like this overblown craziness is And Then We Held Hands. It's a simple game of cards. It was originally a print-and-play game, so you didn't even need the board. But you're a couple of concentric circles, and you are trying to move using colored cards. So it's red, blue, black, and green. So blue and green cards are representing happy emotions. Red and black are danger. They're angry and sad emotions. And so you're trying to use the cards of both yourself and your partner to try and accomplish certain goals and get to certain colors. But unless you're emotionally stable, you're not getting new cards. And so you're balancing, how do I get new cards? How do I accomplish the goals? And how do we move closer together to get both of us to the center of these concentric rings? It's such a simple design, and yet I literally left one of my first games of this crying because I was playing it with my wife and I had to apologize to her because I realized that it was a representation of how I was taking from her when she had nothing to give back to me. I stopped caring about the game and its production and its artwork, which are all very minimal and all very abstract. And I let that abstraction play in my head, and it let me get to the place where I could have that powerful moment. If it had all that other stuff, I wouldn't have been able to do that. I wouldn't be able to make that connection because I needed it to be this simple abstraction. And thus I want to make the turn, because we do this all the time in the church. We do this all the time in our own Christian life. We are drawn to the powerful, to the elaborate, to the cool. We are drawn to this, you know, the powerful speaker, the one that, you know, oh my goodness, that missionary's life is so great. And it reminded me of this story. In college, I was engaging in a little bit of the small talk that you always do when you're meeting new people. It was the kind of stuff like, where are you from? Do you have any brothers and sisters? What's your family like? And there was one particular woman that I was talking to, and she kind of changed the narrative. She said, what's your story? I want to know what your story is. And so I said, okay, buckle up. I said, I knew I was going to go into ministry because I finally met God at 17, and I met him because a friend of mine died. I figured that if a man as cool as him would die, that proves there is no God. But shortly after that, God reached into my life because he led a friend of mine to invite me to a church that was memorializing this kid's life. And after that, I started going to their youth group. And after that, I became a Christian. And after that, I got baptized in that church. And after that, I had no idea what it looked like, but I knew desperately that I needed to serve God. And so I went to Bible college. And for 2 years, I went to this small campus. And then I found my way here to where we were sitting at that moment in the common area of the campus. And she just kind of paused and said, wow. And I said, okay, fair is fair. What's your story? And she dodged that question. And it wasn't like the conversation was over and she just wanted to get away. I knew it was that there was something about it that I knew. And like there's something, there's a reason why she's not telling me. And I wasn't pushy. I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to like be overbearing or anything. But every time I'd saw her, we'd talk about this, that, and the other thing. And then I'd say, by the way, you still owe me a story. And I would, you know, go about my business and we'd see each other again. And I'd say, by the way, you still owe me a story. And eventually she said, okay, I'll tell you. I was 3 years old. My parents were already Christians and they'd already told me Bible stories most of my life. And at some point they looked at me and said, do you want to trust Jesus for your life? And I said, yes. She says, it's boring. My story, there's nothing to my story. And I looked at her then and I said, what do you mean there's nothing to that? I had to wait 17 years before I met God. Yeah, I'd heard his name and yeah, I'd been to church, but I didn't really meet God until I was 17. You were 3. You had a family who was constantly telling you about God. You had been reading the Bible and encountering the Almighty since you could talk. What's not beautiful about that? What's not amazing about that? I would kill for that to be my story. But instead, I have a story about how 17 years went by. 17 years where I did not know God. 17 years of unbridled depression because I thought no one loved me. And by the age of 3, you already knew that God loved you enough to die for you. That is amazing. See, we want the cool story because the cool story is what brings people to God. And I gotta tell you, most people who have really cool stories about like intense life change when they meet God, those people would kill to not have that story. Those people would do anything to not have that story, for their story to instead be this plain, quote unquote, boring testimony of God. Because they would rather have that than to deal with the stuff they had to deal with to get the cool story. There's something beautiful about the simplicity of faith. I love the fact that we actually have a condensation of the entirety of the law in a couple sentences. That Jesus himself, when he was asked what's the most important commandment, says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. You are talking about people who have laws in the hundreds. And he condensed it down to 2. I love that. To kind of keep the theme going, the design of that is so simple and so beautiful and so profound and so moving. The understanding that everything else that is depicted in the powerful holy book that is the Bible, both Old and New Testament, that all of that is condensed into 2 sentences is amazing to me. And I'm constantly finding myself running all of the rest of what I do, all the rest of my theological framework, all the rest of my understanding of life and people and everything is run through those 2 sentences. And it allows me to realize that there is so much give in those 2 sentences and how God is bigger than my own theology. God is bigger than the framework in which I put him. And so I run everything by that, to love God more than I did yesterday and to be able to use that love that God gives to me and that I give to God and point that to my neighbors and the people around me. I do that every day. It's 2 sentences. And there's part of me that really wants to embrace the poetry of that, to just end it on the fact that everything is summarized in 2 sentences and isn't that beautiful. There's one more thing I want to talk about. Because part of this chasing the elaborate, part of this drive to find the cool and the super polished and everything like that, is that a lot of times we attach success and value to those things. We attach the fact that we need to have that stuff to really be doing the good work, to really be truly visibly loved by God. And that's not even kind of the case. And I want to bring the book of James into this. James 1:27 says, "Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world." The short version is that orphans and widows back then, much like many orphans and widows now, but even more so back then in this culture, they had nothing and they had no means of fixing that in and of themselves. Orphans had no one to support them. Widows couldn't work. They couldn't do anything. And so literally you're saying here that true and undefiled religion is going to people who have nothing and no one and be with them. People who can give you nothing. You just give them you. And that's what real service is. That's what real religion is. Because religion is just a word that describes how our faith drives our action. And yeah, a lot of that has to deal with ceremony and all that stuff. But a lot of it is just, I am so drawn to God. I am so pursuant of God that I must do these things in adoration of God. And so the best way to adore God is to serve those who are invisible, thus making yourself invisible. That's what simplicity looks like. There's nothing bad about that other stuff. There's nothing bad about the eye-catching stuff. There's nothing bad about big buildings. There's nothing bad about all the stuff that we attach to doing well. But it's that attachment. It's when we think that we can't be truly loved by God unless we have that stuff. It's when we say that we can't actually serve God unless we have that stuff. God's design for this is much simpler than that. God's design says, love me, love each other, and serve. That's it. And the more we embrace that, the more we embrace the message of God throughout the entirety of the scripture, not just parts of it, not just the things that we want to see, not just the stuff that makes us feel better, but when we take all of it as one unit, love God, love others, and serve. Folks, the rest of the guys will be back next episode. We're going to have some cool stuff lined up. Like I said, there's going to be bonus content that's going to happen. Even earlier tonight, there's going to be something on our YouTube channel that's going to post in the next day or so. I recorded it. We're talking to the Lysites about the new game that Kara Games is coming out with. There's a lot of cool stuff going on, and I can't wait to tell you more about it. But I'm going to wait until the rest of the guys are here, because really, this episode is just me talking to you. And for the sake of the simplicity of it, I kind of dig that. No matter where you find yourself, no matter what you have or don't have, no matter if you're in the midst of some big elaborate thing or if it's just you and some little bits of cardboard, always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.